Radio Prague News. The Foreign Ministry plans to close the Czech consulate in Montreal in a bid to cut costs and in retaliation to Ottawa's decision to impose visas for Czechs, Mladá Fronta Dnes reports. The Social Democrats have said that they will not support Finance Minister Eduard Janota's new austerity package for 2011 in its current form, and 43% of Czechs think that President Václav Klaus should sign the EU's Lisbon Treaty immediately, suggests a poll. The Foreign Ministry plans to close the Czech consulate in Montreal in a bid to cut costs and in retaliation to Ottawa's decision to impose visas for Czechs, the Daily Mladá Fronta Dnes reported on Monday. The ministry plans to shut embassies in Harare and Luanda as well, the newspaper says. Foreign Minister Jan Kohout has refused to comment on the closure of the Canadian consulate. All that he would say was that cuts were being prepared at diplomatic missions around the world. In May, the Czech Republic closed its honorary consulate in Vancouver. In July, Ottawa reimposed visa restrictions for Czechs after hundreds of Czech Roma applied for asylum in Canada. The Social Democrats have said that they will not support Finance Minister Eduard Janota's new austerity package for 2011 in its current form. Party leader Jiří Paroubek said that planned cuts in benefits and savings incentives were inadmissible and urged the interim government to incorporate progressive taxation into next year's austerity package. The lower house recently approved an austerity package for 2010, which will cut next year's budget deficit by 60 billion crowns, around 3.5 billion US dollars, to 163 billion crowns. Next year's budget deficit is predicted to come to 5.3% of GDP, with Finance Minister Eduard Janota aiming to keep the budget deficit in 2011 to no more than 5.5% of GDP. Some 43% of Czechs think that Eurosceptic President Václav Klaus should sign the EU's Lisbon Treaty immediately, suggests a poll conducted by the SANEP agency and released on Monday. The poll suggested that 44% of Czechs believe that further postponing Lisbon ratification harms the Czech Republic's reputation in Europe. 37% of those polled agreed with Czech President's current stance on Lisbon, while 19% said that they did not have an opinion on the matter. President Václav Klaus has previously said that he wants to be the last person to put his signature to the document in Europe. Now that Ireland has voted yes to Lisbon in a referendum held last Friday, and Polish President Lech Kaczynski has said he will sign the document, the Czech Republic will, in all probability, be the last country in Europe to ratify the reform document. And now, a quick look at the weather. It will be overcast over the next couple of days, with showers and temperatures ranging between 13 and 18 degrees Celsius. I'm Rosie Johnston, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, will he or won't he? And if he will, when will he? The pressure mounts on President Václav Klaus to sign the EU's Lisbon Treaty in the wake of the Irish yes. Honouring those who helped to promote the good name of the Czech Republic abroad in the Gracias Agit Awards, and a roundup of all the latest sports news. Also today, Jan Wellinger speaks to the passionate golfer Alan Babitsky about overcoming his initial indifference to the game.
It's close to the situation when you say good deeds for bad reasons. You know, I didn't know what to enjoy about it. I just didn't feel anything except one little thing. That it worked well.
That's all coming up in the next 30 minutes. Stay tuned to hear more. The eyes of Europe are on Czech President Václav Klaus, a fierce Eurosceptic who now holds the key to the ratification of the Lisbon Treaty. After the Irish yes to Lisbon on Friday, the Czech Republic and Poland are the only remaining EU countries yet to ratify the Lisbon Treaty. The Polish head of state is expected to sign it in a matter of days, but Mr. Klaus has shown no intention of breathing life into a document he's so vigorously opposed to. On Saturday, a group of Eurosceptics marched to his seat at Prague Castle with a clear message: don't give up the fight. Jan Richter reports.
Heads of Klaus! Heads of Klaus! Heads of Klaus! Heads of Klaus! Some 200 Eurosceptics, conservative Catholics, libertarians, nationalists and the odd skinhead assembled outside the Irish embassy in Prague's Malá Strana on Saturday, waving signs that said no to Lisbon, EU danger and EU flags with a hammer and sickle, they made their way up to Prague Castle, the seat of Czech President Václav Klaus, who famously refused to fly an EU flag there. Mr. Klaus came out to address his supporters, telling them he shared their views on the Lisbon Treaty. I'm reading all these signs here, remarked Mr. Klaus, and I understand them. Those are my sentiments too, although as president I have to use somewhat weaker words. The Czech president has adamantly refused to ratify Lisbon, even though it was approved by both chambers of parliament. Now he's bound by law to await a verdict by the country's constitutional court that is reviewing the treaty at the request of a group of right-wing senators. The court is expected to reach a verdict within some 6 weeks or so, but many would like Václav Klaus to withhold ratification for much longer, at least until after the spring elections in the UK. Catholic commentator Michal Semin was one of the event's organizers.
We are here to tell him that we will support him if he remains firm and will wait for the elections in Great Britain in case the Tories will win. So then the referendum will be held. And so our position is to support President Klaus to remain in the position he took up until today.
The head of the British Conservatives, David Cameron, has promised that if his party wins the election and the treaty is not ratified at the time, the Tories would hold a referendum on it. But when asked directly what message he had for the British people, Václav Klaus appeared resigned.
Well, I am afraid that the people of Britain should have been doing something really much earlier and not just now, too late, saying something and waiting for my decision. So that's my clear message to all of them.
Is it too late, then?
Too late.
The majority of Czech politicians welcomed the result of the second Irish referendum. Civic Democrat leader Mirek Topolánek told Czech TV on Sunday that the president should ratify the treaty.
Ta smlouva je ratifikována oběma komorami parlamentu a podle přestože nejsem znalec ústavní právník, tak
the treaty was ratified by both chambers of parliament. Although I'm not a lawyer, the way I understand it is that since we don't have a presidential system in the Czech Republic, the president's signature is a mere formality. However, I understand that others might see it differently and argue that the president does not have to sign the treaty. That would get us in a very difficult position.
To nás dostává do velmi nepříjemné situace.
For his part, the head of the Social Democrats, Jiří Paroubek, hopes the Constitutional Court will rule quickly.
Myslím, že by ústavní soud měl rychle rozhodovat. Aspoň tak rychle, jak rozhodoval ve věci zrušení voleb do
I think that the Constitutional Court should decide quickly, and I think that Civic Democrat senators should stop obstructing the ratification. The whole of Europe is watching the Czech Republic now and expects us to complete ratification of the Lisbon Treaty.
Tak, aby nebránila ratifikaci Lisabonské smlouvy.
Until the court's ruling, President Klaus's hands are tied. The real war of nerves will begin if the judges find that the Lisbon Treaty is in line with Czech law. But if President Klaus wants to keep the whole of the European Union waiting for his signature, he'll need much more backing than he got at Prague Castle on Saturday.
Jan Richter reporting there. So, will he sign it or won't he? And what's to be done if he doesn't? That's the question politicians across Europe are asking themselves. Mr. Klaus is keeping everyone in suspense, but political analyst Jiří Peher thinks the Eurosceptic Czech president will soon have to concede defeat.
I think that President Klaus will sign the Lisbon Treaty if the Constitutional Court decides that the treaty is in line with the Czech Constitution. Klaus would be really in a very difficult position. He would find himself under tremendous international pressure, but also domestically from Czech political parties and the Czech parliament. In fact, we would be risking a constitutional war between the president and the parliament, because under such circumstances, the parliament would undoubtedly try to force the president to sign the Lisbon Treaty. And we know that the Czech constitution is in this respect quite harsh to the president, and the president could be impeached.
There is now a debate as to whether it would be wise, if possible, to get the respective group of senators to withdraw their complaint so that the president would be able to sign the treaty immediately. Do you think that is wise, or do you think we should, the Czech Republic should let matters take their course?
I think that the Constitutional Court ruled on the relevant parts of the Lisbon Treaty last year already, and it decided that there were no problems, that the Czech Constitution and the Lisbon Treaty were in line. Of course, the complaint that was lodged by the 17 senators now wants the court to rule on the entire Lisbon Treaty, not only on relevant parts, but still it is highly unlikely that the Constitutional Court would reverse itself and would say that the treaty is not in line with the Czech Constitution. And given these prospects, I think that it would be wise to withdraw this complaint and to make it possible for the Czech Republic to ratify the treaty and maybe get in return some important position in the European Commission. If this does not happen, then of course the European Union will not manage to start in January its functioning under the Lisbon Treaty, and that means that we will continue functioning under the Treaty of Nice. And that treaty says that as of November 2009, if a new treaty is not approved, the number of EU commissioners has to decrease. And so we will be under a lot of pressure to give up a commissioner, or we will be at least blamed by the rest of the European Union for causing this tremendous problem for the Union. So I think that withdrawing this complaint would be a good thing for the Czech Republic.
So either way, you think the Czech Republic has at the most until the end of the year to ratify the treaty?
Absolutely. I think that the Czech Republic has until December, basically, to ratify the treaty. If it doesn't happen, then I think the rest of the European Union will move forward with its own plan. We often hear that there is no plan B, but I don't think it's entirely true. I think that especially the big European countries, Germany, France, Italy, would go ahead with some contingency measures. And from what we can see and what we can hear, it seems that part of this plan is to punish the Czech Republic. And I don't think it's in the interest of this country to be in this kind of position.
So what do you think? Will it be signed by the end of the year?
My opinion is that, yes, the treaty will be signed by the end of this year. I expect the Constitutional Court to rule by the end of November at the latest, and then the president, in my opinion, will sign, will not stand in the way of this process, and the treaty will be ratified by the end of this year.
That was Jiří Pehe speaking to Daniela Lazarová. If you have any views on this subject, we'd love to hear them. English@radio.cz. Every year, the Czech Foreign Ministry presents the Gracias Agit Awards to those who have helped promote the good name of the Czech Republic abroad. Recipients include individuals and institutions from all over the world. This year, the list of laureates ranges from Mariusz Szigiel, a Polish journalist who published a best-selling book about the Czech Republic, to Pontifical College Nepomucenum, an educational institution for Czech clergy in the Vatican. Ruth Frankova has more.
At a gala ceremony on Friday, Foreign Minister Jan Kohout awarded 12 individuals and one institution with the Gracias Agit Award for 2009. Among the recipients gathered at Prague's Černín Palace, home to the Czech Foreign Ministry, was Jeffrey Piper, an English-born translator and amateur musician who lives in Luxembourg. He has been distinguished as a long-term promoter and sponsor of Czech music.
Because I live in Luxembourg, and there was in 1995, Luxembourg was the European capital of culture, and I had an international program involving many Western European countries, and I wanted a country in Eastern Europe outside the European Union. And because the Czech Republic is so musical, I went to Prague to find my musicians.
Afterwards, Mr. Piper set up a non-profit association music enterprise, which aims to promote Czech music in Luxembourg. He explained how it works.
Well, the easiest way is to invite Czech musicians to come to Luxembourg, which is what I do. I have about 30 friends who play in ensembles or who play solo, and whenever I can find a concert opportunity, I invite them to come to Luxembourg to play. If I'm very fortunate, I can have an exchange so that a Czech musician comes to Luxembourg and a Luxembourg musician comes to the Czech Republic.
Among this year's recipients of the Gratias Agit Awards was also Paul Wilson, a Canadian writer, journalist and translator who came to Czechoslovakia in 1967 and stayed for 10 years, until he was expelled from the country for alleged subversive activities. Mr. Wilson translated articles by many Czech writers into English, notably the plays of Václav Havel, enabling their work to be published abroad. Another laureate was 19-year-old Ladislav Matějka, who left the country in 1948 and has lived in the United States since 1954. Among other things, Mr. Matějka cooperated with Radio Free Europe and contributed to the development of Slavic studies at universities in the United States. The Gratias Agit Award was established by the Foreign Ministry in 1997, and over the years, dozens of exceptional individuals were honoured for promoting the good name of the Czech Republic in the world.
Ruth Franková with that report. You're tuned to Radio Prague, the English service of Czech Radio, where Chris Johnston joins us now with a roundup of all the latest sports news.
First to speed skating, or rather cycling. Five-time speed skating world champion Martina Sablikova has notched up her first cycling title. Sablikova, together with professional cyclist Martina Ružičková, won the Czech 25-kilometre women's time trial over the weekend with a time of 33 minutes. The 22-year-old has regularly competed on two wheels during the summer to keep in condition for the winter season, but in spite of some near misses, has never come first.
It was certainly a tough race. It was uphill and downhill. We changed positions a lot, and I think the tactics were good, so it worked out well.
Sablikova says the cycling win confirms her feeling that she's in good condition for speed skating, in particular with the Vancouver Winter Olympics coming up at the start of 2010. Turning to the top domestic football league, there was particular attention on a derby game with a difference over the weekend. It was the first clash between bitter enemies Bohemians Prague and Bohemians 1905. The two clubs have been fighting a legal battle for the last 4 years over which of them is the real Bohemians and has the right to the kangaroo symbol after a previous club went bankrupt. Bohemians Prague had at one stage threatened not to go ahead with the match because of the enmity between them. In the end, the situation on the field mirrored that off it, a scoreless draw. Elsewhere in the league, Jablonec are still the surprise leaders of the domestic Gambrinus competition after a slender 1-0 win against Mladá Boleslav. But attention on Monday is focused on another derby clash between the Prague rivals Sparta and Slavia. Both clubs are recovering from midweek defeats in the European League, which have left them bottom of their groups. Thursday's 5-0 hammering of Slavia at home by French club Lille has intensified speculation that manager Karel Jarolim's job could be on the line if they lose. Staying with football, while the Czech senior football team are uncertain about qualifying for next year's World Cup in South Africa, the under-20 team is already competing in the finals in Egypt and doing well. The Czechs booked a place in the quarterfinals against Hungary on Tuesday after coming second in the group stage. In total, they notched up 2 wins and a draw against Brazil. For team manager Jakub Dovalil, the second place and fixture against Hungary was the best possible outcome. The country's premier equestrian cross-country event, the Velká Pardubická steeplechase, is coming up next weekend. The winning horse for the past 2 years is 16, which set a record time in 2008. 16 is seeking to make it 3 victories in a row on Sunday. That would leave it only one short of equaling the record number of wins at the steeplechase. 16's owner is Czech film producer Jaroslav Bauček. He says he will not be putting a bet on his horse, but only because it is the overwhelming favourite and the odds are too short.
Right, it's now time for our regular interview programme, One-on-One, presented this week by Jan Velde.
This week, my guest in One-on-One is the Czech golf pro Alan Babický. A skilled businessman, but also a former dancer, choreographer, and downhill skier, Babický picked up the sport of golf only at the age of 28. But within 10 years, he had built up a solid reputation. He even won the World Golfers Championship in Thailand in 2004, one of the most prestigious competitions for amateur players. Well, recently I caught up with Alan Babický to discuss his career. I first asked how much he knew about golf the first time he ever played.
Absolutely nothing. Zippo, as they say in the States. Today, if you invite somebody to come to golf course or play golf, they know at least a little bit. They know Tiger Woods, maybe. They know 18 holes. I didn't know any of that.
And how was it that you came to be on this golf course?
Well, I worked as a marketing manager for Pepsi, and we agreed to sign the contract with Karlstein, 1994, I think it was. And they were opening the back nine in September, and I was there in October to sign the contract. And obviously, as you know, all golf enthusiasts, they forced me to try it. So that's how I pick up golf.
Now, was it in this first game, or was it in games that followed that you sort of caught the spark, that you realized, hey, this is a sport that I really like?
Well, it's close to the situation when you say good deeds for bad reasons. You know, I didn't know what to enjoy about it. I just didn't feel anything except one little thing, that it worked well. Somehow I found something which immediately worked. You know, like I never missed the golf ball in a normal situation. I did miss it in like, you know, deep rough with open love wedge 6 years later. But the first lesson I had, I didn't miss a golf ball. And I never shot over 100. There was something that worked.
Sports, of course, were nothing new to you. You did dance and choreography. You were also a semi-pro skier.
Probably the dance was the better part of sort of, you know, being able to hit the first shots decent and copy the movement of the pro and remember the rhythm and a couple of other things maybe as well. Because when somebody tells you, you know, keep your shoulder, I don't know, up or high or anything, your elbow, if you're not a dancer, it's something new to you.
How long did it take for you to advance your game?
Well, the only thing I remember really was that I spent from the first day, which was something like mid-October, I spent almost every night at the indoor facility, which back then was at Strahov. That facility was closed in January, and at the same time, the Erpet golf indoor facility was open in 1995. It was on the way from my office to home, so I spent every night practicing there. In April, I think it was, I played my first tournament in Karlsbad, in Karlovy Vary, and I shot something like 95. That was the first sort of competitive experience.
And all of this intensive practice was taking place while you were holding a regular day job.
Yeah, of course. It was the same thing until 2004, November, when it was, back then it was a 10th sort of anniversary of hitting the first golf ball, and I happened to win a worldwide tournament which is called World Golfers Championships, which is organized by the Swedish ice hockey player Tomba Johansson. And it's like the equivalent of the World Championships, but with your handicaps. So you play in categories, and your result depends on your game, obviously, but also they deduct handicaps. and I happened to win it. So and that was the reason I decided that I want to go entrepreneur and establish the company that I'm co-owning and working for now. But until then, so it was long 10 years of being a manager of a company, working 10 hours a day and then practicing at night.
Tell me a little bit about the culture of golf in the Czech Republic. Obviously, during the communist years, it wasn't something that had any kind of tradition here, but there was a tradition before the 1948 putsch, wasn't there?
There's a beautiful book called Golf in the Czech Republic, from which I know that Czech Republic was the only country in the old communist bloc which had little bit of golf surviving the socialistic era. We had, I think, three courses here, and something like 1,800 players when I started. In 1994, there was less than 2,000 players and something like five courses. And since then, the golf has grown. Czech Republic has become the fastest growing golf country in the world now. It's the official result of some studies. And now we have over 40,000 players, over 80 courses, and something like 126 clubs.
Why is that?
Well, that's a very good question, which probably leads us to why is golf so popular in here? Because people are playful and they like sports and they like to do it in the nature. So you know, that combines for golf. And at the same time, it's a very good platform for marketing. So all entrepreneurs and all big companies utilize golf as a communications or CRM platform. And that's probably it.
You've been a dancer, you've been a business manager. Golf seems to have been the major decision in your life. Can you foresee any other surprises? Is there anything else that you may still try in the future that may once again change everything and change the paradigm?
When I made those changes, they didn't feel like changes because it gradually went from one thing to another, and it sort of grew logically, time-wise and place-wise and everything. There's no more surprises. Life's too short, and I'm 42 now. I'm going to be 43 soon. There's no time to change anything anymore. This is it.
Even when, say, you're 65.
Well, that's a good thing about it. Golf sort of satisfied my childhood dream of being a good sportsman. I really wanted to win the Olympics, and I wanted to win the World Cup skiing, and I wanted to win the Wimbledon in tennis, and just like every other kid, I suppose. But obviously, I didn't make it that. So I gave it up when I was 24 or 5. And then all of a sudden, out of a blue sky, when I was 28, I came to a sport where the age doesn't play such an important role, and you still can play well. You know, it gave me a little bit of satisfaction because I was able to finish sixth at the European Championships, which is not great, but for somebody who starts at 28, it's pretty good. You wouldn't be able to do that in any other sport.
It sounds pretty good to me, I have to say. Alan Babitsky, thank you very much.
Thank you, my pleasure.
And One on One is all we have time for today. So for myself, Rob Cameron, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye.